On this episode of the Formula Fun Podcast, Eric and I review the Belgian Grand Prix and discuss the dangers inherent in motorsport in general and Formula One in particular on a sad weekend in which we remember the life of young Formula Two star and generally great human person, Antoine Hubert, to whose memory Eric and I would like to dedicate the following. For you either? You said you got to go in later?
No. Well, I am lucky enough. I kind of set my own, well, I can't set my own hours, but I have my shop hours. So we're closed today, but I might go in to get ahead of stuff, but
that's good.
I'm pretty sure I speak for the whole planet when I say that we should have 3-day weekends be the standard.
Every weekend. Yeah.
I think we'd all take a small pay cut just to have.
Oh yeah. No doubt. Today. And I think that there is actual research. This is not the banter I was expecting to talk about, but there is actual research that proves that, like, you cut people's work hours in half and they're like twice as productive because just the amount of time that they don't actually work at work.
They're like a happy, refreshed worker coming back in.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, just work 10-hour days instead of 4-hour days. You know, you'd have to change, you could fix it, just change the name of the word Monday, you know, just think of another word that's more like Saturday and Sunday, and then boom, we got 3-day weekend.
Yeah, forever. That would be great. Or you can just become a teacher where you get summers off, like me.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Well, what's going on with you? It's still a Formula One podcast, isn't it?
This is still a Formula One podcast, so we should talk about that. I do have some Formula One related banter, actually. Normally I didn't. Normally I don't. I should say, my Formula One related banter is I was interested to see, I'm trying to read it while I actually say it. So that's kind of hard to do, but I got it on my phone. I was interested at how strongly worded Ricardo's comments were about, first of all, the death of Antoine Hubert, which obviously we need to talk about. We will in a second, but, just because of the way people reacted, you know, you typically get these reactions that are like, the best thing to do is to just go ahead with the race. We feel most comfortable in our race cars. The best way to honor them is to race and all of that, which I understand. And that's normal and expected. But I was surprised. I don't know if you saw this or not.
Didn't read it to me. What did it say?
Yeah, I'm going to read you the exact quote because this is coming from a race driver. And I just thought it was pretty strongly worded. Let's say he said, this is Ricardo, so imagine an Australian accent. I won't try to do it. I know, weirdly enough, the best way we can kind of show our respect was to race today, but I don't think any of us actually wanted to be here or wanted to race. I'm speaking for myself, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. So that's the first thing he says. I'm sure I'm not the only one who didn't want to race today. I was surprised to hear that. Then he goes on and says, you have to question, is it really worth it? For sure, because at the end of the day, it's a pretty honest question. It's our job and our profession and our life, but it is still just racing cars around in circles.
See, and that's surprising to me too. And I think that tells you a lot about Ricardo and the difference between him and somebody like Lewis Hamilton. Because did you see what Lewis posted on his Instagram after the crash?
I didn't see the Instagram post. So I've been avoiding Instagram until I watched the race because I didn't want to spoil anything.
So they showed him the crash and you could just kind of see, like, he was a little shocked, but then here's what he put on Instagram. If a single one of you watching and enjoying this sport think for a second what we do is safe, you're hugely mistaken. All of these drivers put their life on the track and people need to appreciate that in a serious way because it is not appreciated enough. Not from the fans, nor some of the people actually working in the sport. Antoine is a hero, as far as I'm concerned, for taking the risk he did to chase his dreams.
Yeah.
I'm so sad that this happened. Let's lift him up and remember him. Rest in peace, brother. But I think Hamilton wanted to be there. Like, that just shows, like, that to me, that's like, I bring up golf too much, but Rory McIlroy brings up the same thing when he gets pressured on winning the last majors and stuff. And he's like, there's more to life than golf. But the guys that are truly great and are truly the best ever in their sport are people like Tiger or Hamilton, where like mm-hmm.
there they can isn't switch it on. Yeah, no, yeah, maybe not, right?
Like they are all in for winning and for their sport and stuff. But wow, that is interesting.
I want to come back to that quote.
When they're going into the racing line where there's a little tiny gap, like that tells me like Ricardo's not gonna try to take that gap. Like he's gonna be more inclined to
maybe a little bit more inclined than Lewis would be, or someone like Max would be, or someone like K Mag would be, you know, who you know are. Lewis said something along the lines too of like once you get in the car, you're switched on or you're in the zone, and that's, you know, you forget about everything else. I do want to come back to what he said there. I was just so surprised that Ricardo would use the language of someone who like didn't like motorsports, you know, saying something like we just drive around in circles is something that it's like a cliche that people who don't like racing say, right? I just don't understand racing. All they do is just drive around in circles. What's the point? And I was just so surprised that he would use such strong language to be critical of his own sport. I mean, I understand that there's this sentiment of like, should we actually race? Do we really need to be here today? But to say like, all we do is just drive around in circles. He obviously maybe was just really affected by it. You know, maybe Ricardo he's more emotional about that kind of thing than other people. The way he reacts is different and stronger, stronger than the other drivers.
Yeah, he may have been just trying to show like how much it has been affecting him, and it kind of came off as like, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't want to be. I don't know how well he knew Antoine Hubert. I know
he was a Renault driver.
I knew Gasly was like great friends with him, and I knew that, and I know that Leclerc grew mm-hmm. up with him and was mm-hmm. great friends with him too. So I mean, mm-hmm.
which we can come back to later when we talk about the actual race, because isn't it just so fitting that Leclerc would get his first win on a day that his. You know, I don't know if they were friends or not, but certainly, you know, he openly dedicated the race to Antoine, and they
and
grew up racing together. So
after the race too was interesting and amazing to me. He almost like couldn't even celebrate because he was just like, weird.
They
that
didn't
great,
really. So did you
like,
notice? Did you watch the podium at all, or do you switch off before the podium? I sometimes switch off before the podium, but I did watch this time. They didn't spray champagne all over each other.
They didn't spray champagne. I had that written down, highlighted, starred, circled. Like that was. I went back three times and watched it, trying to understand why they didn't do champagne. They obviously had the green before that, just because of.
They just didn't want to celebrate because of the death. No, because of the death, they were just being. They were. I think that's just kind of a motorsport way of mourning.
Botas still got a big gulp in, though.
Did he? Yeah, the Finns.
He kicked back and got on his mouth. He took a quarter of that bottle down before
the Finns are ready to get drunk after the race for sure. Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me of another thing about the podium, but I want to come back to Hamilton's comments that you read for a second, because I mean, this is controversial, maybe, but I guess that's the point of a podcast, and at least in some small part, is. Is he a hero? Are you a hero for dying in a race car? You know, like that's kind of along the lines of like a football player referring to himself as a soldier or something like that to me a little bit, because I get it that what they do is super courageous. And I want to talk about Antoine Hubert because I think he deserves at least a moment on our podcast since this is a Formula One podcast and he's part of the sport. But going so far as to say he's a hero for dying in a race car is too far for me. You're not a hero for doing that. You're a hero for running into a burning building and saving the lives of children and wives and pets and fathers and brothers and sisters. You know, you're a hero for being an emergency room surgeon and saving people from bullet wounds and stuff. You know, you're not a hero for dying in a race car. Now that's
he was saying he's a hero for putting his life on the line to chase his dreams, which he could make him a hero to himself. But
so he worded it a little differently than
I think you have a valid point, but I think you know, if you're a driver too and you're in that same situation, and when that happens, like there is a self-preservation part of your brain that you can't resist that is going to kind of be like that could just as easily have been me. I mean, so I think you kind of have to have that like mental. Positive brainwashed self-talk to believe that to justify
a good
getting
point.
In his car the next day. And because I mean, did you? I mean, and it's terrible that we even watched the crash.
I didn't watch it. I'm not going to watch it.
I didn't seek it out. It just popped up on Twitter, and then there was a big campaign of not to show it. It was really just kind of caught by like a secondhand view. It looked like he got clipped or something and initially went into the side hard, but then he popped back out and got hit.
Just someone else hit him. Yeah.
By a trailing car.
And what's especially dangerous about that, not to mention just of course being hit by a race car in your own car, but once you've already wrecked, your car is obviously structurally damaged, so you're not prepared to take the same kind of impact that you would if it had just been the second wreck was the first wreck. You know, maybe he would have survived. And I have heard descriptions of the wreck and stuff, and I'm familiar with how it happened. I'm just not going to watch the video. I don't want to watch someone die, basically. I'm just not – it's not the kind of thing I like to watch on the internet.
Formula One, in a way, there's not – I can't think of any other sports – maybe like boxing.
Yeah, I mean, MMA. A few boxers have died this year, actually.
Somebody can just kind of die, and like they mourn them, and they did the standing ovation at the race. But like, it's amazing how they just real quickly, like, just everything's back into business mode. Like, if you went to the bathroom or had it on mute the certain times they mentioned it and stuff, and you were new to Formula One, like, you may have had no idea other than if you saw the stickers and stuff that they had on stuff. But you know.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Very sad, though.
Speaking of K-Mag again briefly and wrecking, and you know that he did make those comments that we've discussed on the podcast before about, and I think they were taken a little bit out of context. I think he's since then he's sort of had the opportunity to sort of contextualize that a little bit different, and he's changed his tone, or his tone was meant to be more like, of course I don't want to die in a race car, but you have to be willing to die in a race car in order to do
I've learned, unless you're watching unedited footage, like, they probably loaded him up for that answer.
Oh, sure.
I learned they had a Raiders player on Hard Knocks, and they were showing his plays, and then they were putting audio from different plays onto that play to make it look more dramatic.
Sure.
So, like,
of course.
We
have to give him the benefit of that. Of course, he doesn't want to die, or he's not like looking forward to dying in a race car. He did also say, though, in addition to talking about wrecking, I feel like I forget where I saw this on some interview with him somewhere, where he said that crashing is fun, that he's not afraid to crash. Like, are you afraid to crash? And he said, honestly, no, because it's kind of fun. Once he said it's a combination of fun and frustrating. Because you're frustrated that you lost the car and you know a wreck is coming, but it's fun at that point because these guys are such adrenaline junkies that you're going 180 miles an hour and you know that you're going to have a big shunt, but you know you're going to, what he said at least was, you know you're going to walk away from it and be okay. It's like going for a ride, it's like a carnival ride to him.
You hit the barriers that are designed for that. We've seen what you saw what happened with Jules, where he hit a truck. Taking another car off. I mean, I don't think if you asked Antonio Gio, who just hit the wall at about 180 miles an hour yesterday, that was fun, based upon his response to "Are you okay?" And I think now everybody who watches and stuff, after a death and a bad crash like this, every time you see any crash like that, like even the Gio crash, just kind of you get like an extra chill, that you didn't get last week because 100% you think it's 100%. So rare.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, was I just wonder now if K-Mag will still think it's fun, you know, the next time he's coming up Radeon and loses the rear end and goes careening towards the wall. I wonder if he's going to be like, let's bring it on.
Is that just a tire? It's just tires going on him? That was a strange crash.
The wreck? I think the first car, the way I understand it, and I've only heard it described, you know, I've read about it and I've heard it described. I haven't watched it. But from what I understand, you know, he was kind of collected in another car's wrecking. I forget what the guy's name was, but, you know, one of the cars in front of him lost the rear end, you know. And that could be tires, or it could just be that coming out of that corner, that's a really high-speed corner, one of the highest-speed sections on the track, and it's a fast...
on the track. Towards the end of the race, too, all those cars are just about to fall apart.
And you can just lose grip. You know, you can just lose grip. You just lose the car for a second, or, you know, you, I mean, it just happens. You know, you can lose grip, and it can be no one's fault. It doesn't have to be driver error necessarily or car error. It just, the car lost grip there. I do wonder, you know, they're kind of coming off the crest of a hill. Maybe that, like, the change in gravitational center of gravity could lighten the car a little bit, which makes it a little bit easier to lose the rear end there. But that's, I don't know why, but someone lost the rear end of the cars and collected him. And then, of course, like you said, he got hit again. And maybe that's a good time to transition into the news of his death. And just, I think it's worth saying again, just because we're a Formula One podcast, then we should do like maybe like a little moment where we tribute him by at least mentioning that he sounds like a wonderful person. I think that's worth saying, like, not just a courageous and talented racing driver, which he obviously was. You know, that's another thing. We didn't lose like a, which it would have been equally tragic if we did, but this guy was a talent. You know, he was supposed to be a future Formula One driver, so it's sad to see that. Yeah. But he also apparently was just a great dude, supposedly. Yeah. Worth mentioning that, I think. So it's sad. Sad that he died. Obviously, there's nothing more to say. What else can you possibly say about that? Super sad.
Yeah. Super sad.
Yeah. Did you have any banter that we haven't covered yet before we kind of go deeper into the news? Because I know there's a couple news items that we need to talk about for sure that happened this week. But
not really. I mean, that was one of the most exciting first laps I've seen in a while. But to me, just the rest of the race was a pretty big snooze fest.
Oh, really?
I guess is when a guy's dominating like that, although he almost kind of got caught at the end.
Yeah.
That's kind of how they are. But like, I even watched the highlights put out by Formula One today, and it was showed the first lap.
Yeah.
And it showed like lap 36, and then it showed lap 44.
Right. Yeah. So, there was a lot of battling going on in the midfield as usual.
Yeah.
Which was fun to watch.
And just seeing how the qualifying was so crazy, and just how poor when the Mercedes engines kind of started going, it almost made you wonder if like maybe Mercedes wasn't running their new engines on full power because they were afraid of what would happen just because of what was happening with their other teams.
That is speculation I have heard elsewhere, that Mercedes turned it down a couple notches just to be extra safe to get to the end of the race, which wouldn't surprise me at all. But yeah, it was interesting because it did kind of, now that you mention it, I look back on it, I was super thrilled that whole race because I was so pumped for Charles Leclerc to potentially win his first race. So for me, that was a really thrilling race. So
you've probably rewatched it three times.
I've rewatched the beginning of it. I almost rewatched the whole thing and I was like, this is silly. I don't need to sit here and watch the whole race again. I just watched it. And then I like put on YouTube or something different, but, like I literally almost just restarted it right after I finished it because I was bored. Doing nothing. It was late at night. But I thought it was good, and we can get more into like the tactics of the race when we start talking about the teams and stuff. Like it was good to see like a little bit of strategy come into play between Mercedes and Ferrari, and kind of like you said, like towards the end of the race there, it did look like it was going to get close. And Vettel not held up Hamilton, maybe he would have caught him.
A lot of people said one more lap and Hamilton would have won. Or if it wasn't for Vettel kind of, which I think was cool of him. I mean, obviously probably most teammates in that situation didn't do that, but it was just nice to see them working together. And I mean, it's just too bad for Max.
Let's talk about that. Okay, whose fault was that in your opinion? Okay, Max's or Kimi's or what? Because I know you're a Kimi fan. But I know you're a Max fan too, aren't you?
I'm a Max fan too. Angle one, I think that way, I thought it was on Max. But when you look at that reverse angle, you see how much room Kimi has on his left side. And you can say what you want. He didn't know he was there. He didn't expect him to be there. I don't believe that. Kimi could have given him room. He didn't. It's in his right not to give him room, but he could have given him room.
Yeah.
But what I think is the best part about all this, amazing how Kimi didn't sustain more damage and was able to like not have to pit and continue the race. It's amazing how those cars get launched when the tires.
I know
hit.
It's so scary for a brief second. It looks like it's going to flip.
But Kimi, I think Kimi did this maybe on purpose too. Kimi's the one who clipped Max. Max already had steering issues, but Kimi's the one who clipped him and put him into the wall. He clipped his front gear and just put Max straight into the wall after he came back by him.
Oh, so yeah. Kimmy. Oh, you mean the wreck that Max suffered immediately after? So he hit...
Was Kimmy. Kimmy clipped him.
Yeah.
At like twice the speed and clipped him and basically wrecked him, which I thought was pretty
fun. I think they did wreck twice. They basically hit and then recovered and then hit again. But I think Max went into the wall because his front suspension was broken. I'm pretty sure that's why he ended up wrecking. Because you see him trying to steer the car and he can't.
You see him trying to steer and he can steer. And then Kimmy comes at a high rate of speed. Kimmy clips his front wing completely.
Oh, okay.
Sheared off his wheel. Mm. And he just veered
You're saying Kimmy did that on purpose. That's your call.
Kimmy wrecked Max.
Wrecked Max out. Okay. Hot take. That's a hot take. The actual wreck itself was super interesting. Because when I first saw it, I was immediately really hard on Max. That is Max's fault. You know, Caitlin was watching with me too, and we were both just like, oh man, what is Max thinking? There's no room there. That's a really tight corner there. La Source, it's called, right? The very first corner of the race. You have to know as Max that Kimmy is going to take that apex, especially if he doesn't know you're there. And if you look at where Max places his car, Max is like trying to squeeze right in between the wall and the apex. Like he's off the track. And at first it just looks like Max goes driving right into Kimmy, which makes it look really bad. But the more I've watched it, the more I have kind of interpreted it as Max made an aggressive move, which he's quote unquote entitled to. You know, you hear these people talk about racing space and they say he's entitled to that space, right? He's entitled to the space if it's there. Max didn't drastically overshoot the corner. He ended up at the apex of the corner, just inside of it. You know, it's not like he just torpedoed into Kimmy. Kimmy closed the door on him because he didn't know he was there. So in that sense, I think it is almost like 50-50, no one's fault. But if you do have to blame somebody, you have to blame Max, because even though you're entitled to that space, doesn't mean it's a good idea to go throw your car into that space in the first corner of the race when you have a potentially race-winning car, you know. And then especially if you know the guy knows you're not there. It's just like driving into a guy's blind spot. He's going to close the door on you. I don't know. Max should have maybe been more measured than he was, and that's all. That's why I think it's his fault.
Yeah. I mean, I've never sat in a Formula One car. I know they have the side mirrors, which I know
they do.
The side mirrors suck. But I don't know if he was completely in his blind spot. And if Max, I don't know who was behind Max either. He slams on his brakes there. He might get wrecked from whoever's from behind him too. I mean,
yeah, I don't know who was directly behind him or if anyone was, but I know he did overtake, I think it was Perez or whatever. The British people say Perez. It's hard not to say Perez, we say here in Texas. He overtook like two cars. So he may have, you know, it was an aggressive move, but I don't know if anyone ended up directly behind him. But
Max was very calm too after the wreck. It was surprising. You know,
he said all the right things.
He just kind of serenely took off his steering wheel and asked the marshals which way he was supposed to exit the track.
Comments too reflected a great deal of calm, because I thought he did a great job of just being like, yeah, I went for this. He said exactly kind of what happened. You know, he didn't blame Kimmy, and
maybe he was team Ricardo and didn't really want to be there. Another hot take.
Maybe he's just like, I'm glad this race is over and I'm safe and I'm done for today. Maybe that reminds me of another bit of banter. This is silly, huh? Go ahead. What'd you say?
Is there another race? Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say another silly bit of banter that I thought was not dumb, but Max's helmet was supposed to be orange. You notice that, like, he wears like orange hats for Belgium. There's like bust out the orange hats because it's Belgium. And so he was going to wear an orange helmet too, which on the surface is a good idea. It makes sense. You know, orange is like Max's color and everything, and they wear the orange hats. But his helmet just looked red to me, which I know is silly. Like, that's a dumb piece of banter, but I just thought you go to all that trouble to have a special helmet, like, get it right. It looked red.
I didn't know. I didn't look back at it. I think it was just, was it off? I don't know.
Look back at it. Max's Belgium helmet or something like that. Tell me that's not red when you find that picture of that. I'm going to Google it too. We can always just make edit. Max Verstappen.
It looked orange in the one from 3 days ago, but it may have been different. in the race.
Yeah, in the pictures of like the where the helmet itself is just sitting there, it looks orange. But when he's wearing it, like out on the track, it was like deep, deep, deep orange, and like in the sunlight, it just looked red. This might be from last year too.
That's just the Doppler shift of how fast he's going compared to all the other drivers.
That's funny. Real quick, because we're getting kind of into the race itself, which is awesome because there was, you know, that's worth talking about. Obviously, that's what the majority of the show will be about. But I thought it would be worth talking about the whole Ocon to Renault, which we both kind of predicted because we were saying last week how we thought it might be a good idea to just keep Bottas. So what are your thoughts about that? Ocon to Renault, Hülkenberg's out, Bottas staying at Mercedes. That's the other big news of the week.
I think it's great. I'm glad he's actually got a seat. He's not just, you know, a reserve driver, Mercedes. I think Hülkenberg will probably get a spot at one of the other teams next year, possibly.
They're talking about maybe Haas replacing Grosjean, which would be awesome. I'd love that. You know, I'm a Hülkenberg fan.
I don't know. I still think Haas. I don't know.
I know that, you want Haas to get rid of K-Mag too, but
the same lower midfield team. They need something bigger. They need something.
Well, there is nobody bigger, though. Who else are they going to go get, though? That's the thing, is that when you have somebody like Hülkenberg who's proven that he's already a successful Formula One driver and he just happens to be looking for a job, you know, you take him. You've got to. There's really no one. The only other situation they're talking about, which is a bit of a stretch, but they're saying Hülkenberg to Haas to replace Grosjean, where they keep K-Mag because he already is signed for 2020 through 2020 with Haas. And the other situation is maybe Hülkenberg to Red Bull if Albon and Kvyat and Gasly, that whole triumvirate of potential drivers doesn't work out and they look somewhere else for talent, then it could end up Max and Hülkenberg at Red Bull. But, and we'll get to this when we talk about Red Bull in a minute, I think Albon's the real deal. I think he's going to be fine.
I did too. I was a little nervous in the midway part of the race because he wasn't really going through the pack. But then I saw his interview after, and he said he was just having trouble on the medium compound tires. And then as soon as he went back on the soft, he just tore through the field.
He went. Really, what did he go like?
So, and I understand why they did it, but I was so pissed they didn't give him a shot in qualifying to like get more comfortable with the car, or because they just kind of. I think he was at risk at Q2, and they just held him in the garage because he was already having the grid penalty. But like,
yeah, they didn't let him really, truly have a qualifying. That's right.
Yeah, which is a little, you know.
Yeah. So, I organized the teams in order of basically how many points combined their drivers earned, and then I thought we would just go through them one by one like that. So Ferrari is first. And obviously Leclerc taking his first victory, but maybe the bigger story here, if there is a bigger story than that, you'd think that would be the major storyline, is Leclerc has now out-qualified Vettel 6 times in a row. Leclerc was better on every day of practice, qualifying, had better, stronger race pace. Even Vettel admitted that he just didn't have a handle on the car. He was slower than Leclerc all weekend. Vettel was overtaken by Leclerc, even though for a moment it looked like they were still going to favor Vettel. I was losing it when they pitted Vettel first and he came out on track ahead of Leclerc. I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. They're going to screw Leclerc again, but we can come back to that.
And they apparently even said on the radio, like, don't worry, it'll work.
Oh, man, I was losing it. I was so upset about that temporarily until I was sure that Leclerc was going to catch him and pass him again. And then, speaking of which, they order Vettel out of the way of Leclerc. And then Vettel ends up holding up Hamilton, basically playing the role of a second driver. So my question to you is this. Is this the weekend that Sebastian Vettel becomes the de facto number two driver at Ferrari?
If it continues on this course, it could fire Vettel up. And I think you just got to go with whoever's performing the best that weekend with the car.
Yeah.
But I think... they were 1A, 1B, and now maybe they're 1AA and 1AAB.
1A, 1C.
I mean, if Leclerc would have won in Bahrain, I think it would be different. He would be, you know, strict 1-2 because he'd have the only win. But remember, Vettel, he should have won, or he claims it's still a win.
Oh, in Canada.
Yeah, in Canada. So I don't know.
Crossed the
line
first in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. That is true. I did kind of forget about that. That Vettel technically won in Canada, although that was pre-podcast days. We didn't get a chance to. That would have been a fun one to talk about.
Leclerc's been on a real calm run. Maybe he's doing more yoga. Maybe he's got a therapist or something. But I'm like waiting. Like I know it's coming. Like
you think he's gonna snap?
We're gonna see a DNF here pretty soon.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he definitely has not been mistake free. He's admitted to his own mistakes, and he's had, you know, the mistake in Baku where he probably should have been on pole there, and then he wrecked in qualifying and was unable to qualify, where he ended up like 10th or something in Q3. He's had his mistakes. Man, Hamilton had his mistakes. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but Hamilton looked all over the place in free practice in the wall.
Mercedes.
Do what?
I'm ready to move on to Mercedes.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of Mercedes, then I guess like Hamilton started the weekend in the wall.
And I missed that. I saw P1, but I didn't get to watch P2 or P3. So I didn't see it, but just amazing how they can even get the car back.
I know. Up to the end. That was FP3, I think. Like right at the end, that was on Saturday morning, and they only had like a couple hours to put the car back together, which is, I got in a fender bender. I wish they could put my car back together in 2 hours for free. Just let me hop back in it.
He did say there were like vibrations and stuff, I think, with the front suspension and qualifying. So I'm sure they had another late night after qualifying, getting it ready to go for the race.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. That's a good point. But yeah, Hamilton, it was interesting to just watch him drop the car like that. Somebody who's obviously so usually just millimeter perfect, and he ended up, I think, just took too much curb around a fast right-hander, lost the rear end of the car, and then couldn't recover, which also looked strange that he looked like he had plenty of time to recover the car and still couldn't. Went into the wall pretty hard. But that's practice.
Who was at fault in your fender bender, or was it more of a
me?
Kimi-Mack
situation? No. It was clearly my fault. 100%. I just rear-ended somebody, not paying attention like I should have been. So that's the long story of that, or the short story of that story. Yep, cars in the shop. It's great. I love it. yeah, you'll notice I did not bring that up as part of my banter. I was like, what's going on with you? Yeah, my car's in the shop. I did. Oh, man, it's driving me nuts. And it's my second fender bender in like a year, so I'm getting tired of fixing my car. But
Low insurance pump up there.
Yeah.
Taking Ubers to school.
No, I did. I took an Uber to school the first day, but my car's gonna be in the shop for a while. I feel like it was in the shop for like 10 days last time, so I can't Uber like that to and from school every day. That'd be like $60 a day. It's just cheaper to rent a car, so I just rented a car.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mercedes. I thought at first I was like, Leclerc's gonna pull away. You know, he's gonna piss off at the front. Control the race, and Mercedes just won't have the pace to catch him because it looked like Ferrari was too strong. The Ferrari engines were too strong around Spa, but they still managed to come up with a strategy. And like you said, it looked like maybe one more lap, or Vettel doesn't hold up Hamilton for as long as he does. Hamilton gets past Vettel a little bit quicker, and Mercedes was in it at the end again. And it looked like Hamilton was going to win again, which you just once again have to hand it to Mercedes and their strategists and how they're able to pull.
Just how good they are all around.
Yeah. How they can nearly wrest victory from Ferrari at a track where they had no business, not no business, but you know, they were not as strong as Ferrari, or at least it looked that way all weekend. So that was super impressive. And then, Bottas had a okay race. I think he, finished third.
He's comfy now. New 4-year extension.
Yeah, he's a little comfy. He's not too worried. But what else can you say about Hamilton and the Mercedes chase? I mean, I guess it was super exciting to watch at the end. I was on the edge of my seat at the end. I thought he was going to catch.
It made it a race, which is great. I mean, it just shows how hard they're going to be to beat week, Grand Prix, but
yeah.
I'm just excited to see the battle next week.
Yeah, it was cool to watch the battle here too, especially at this track, because you had the sections of the track that were long and straight where Ferrari was clearly faster all race long, even towards the end of the race when Lewis was on fresher tires. And then you had the section of the track like sectors 2 and 3 where Mercedes' car was more suitable for it and they were faster. And so they were making up that time, especially, like I said, towards the end of the race. So that was cool. That might not be the case as much in Monza. That's a more power circuit, and maybe Ferrari and Leclerc go and win again next week, but we can get to that later. Great drive by Hamilton. Average drive by Bottas. Good strategy from Mercedes. Sees them almost pull off another win. Really fun to watch the bat. Man, how nervous would you be if you were Charles Leclerc and you're driving for your first ever Formula One victory and you just see that number 44 silver arrow in your rearview mirror is just getting a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit closer, and you're thinking the greatest Formula One driver in the history of Formula One is chasing me down. I cannot make a single mistake. That's impressive. I mean, that's scary and impressive from Leclerc to have Hamilton chasing him down like a shark. And oh, you just got really big. I didn't do anything, but
I'm zooming in. I'm getting ahead of myself. I was looking at the Monza track.
Oh, yeah, Monza is a real heavy power circuit where Ferrari is expected to be again favorites next week because their engine prowess. But
their home race too.
Yep. So
the red.
That pretty much covers the top four, the battle between the top four. And you know what? Maybe it wasn't a heck of a race, but we had three cars, you know, or at least two towards the end. But for a majority of the race, there were three or maybe even four cars that could have won, which is cool. And on different strategies, with different setups, and you know, it made for an exciting race at the front. And as we get more towards the midfield, we can talk about some of the excitement there too, which brings us to Red Bull. Speaking of the midfield, Albon, dude, what are your thoughts about Albon going 17th to 5th? Not bad.
Yeah. I love how he's got his whole family there too. And they're all like back in the pit, all excited. And it's just, he's just a nice, happy young face at Red Bull. Like you see Gasly and you'd just be like, ugh, like you're an anchor. But you know, exciting times to be a fan of the energy drink conglomerate known as Red Bull.
So you're on board with Albon. You like Albon. Oh, yeah, you think he's the real deal?
I think he's the real deal.
Yeah, I do too. He had, in a strange way, these engine penalties this weekend were kind of perfect for him because it takes the pressure off. You know, you're starting at the end of the grid, at the back of the grid, and then all you have to do is go drive through the field and look really good and end up fifth, which is about as good as he was going to end up. Or maybe he ended up fourth. No, Vettel was fourth. That's right. Vettel was fourth. Yeah. So that was kind of a great way to start your weekend, and passing Pierre Gasly on the road too. At one point, I wonder if he gave him a little wave with a little on his way by. See you later, Pierre. So thanks for the car. Appreciate that. And then Max, of course, we covered that, his DNF, his wreck. So not a great day for Red Bull, but you have to wonder if they're super excited about Alex Albon like we are, because I think at this point, I mean, it's only been one race, but he looks really, really good. And
yeah,
he's looked better and
Red
better
Bull
all
Jr.
season. Yeah. Good day for the Red Bull Juniors. Yeah, speaking of Red Bull Juniors, Toro Rosso, Gasly was running as high as fourth or fifth, I think, at some point in the race. Yeah, Gasly was I have notes here about it. I forget exactly when it was in the race, but
before he had pitted, though. I think he was like one of the last to pit.
It was before the early pits. People started pitting around lap 14 or 15, but Gasly was the lead Red Bull car. I mean, that Albon started in 18th or 17th or wherever he started, but Gasly was the highest Honda powered car on the road for 6 or 7 laps at the beginning of the race before the early pits.
Did you see Gasly pre-race? Did you see the interview they did with him?
No, what'd he say? Was it super awkward and weird?
It wasn't as much what he said as how he looked and how his hat
Ooh, tell me about his hat. Tell me about Gasly's hat.
It looked normal.
No, it didn't.
I wanted to see it because it looked normal. I wanted to see if you know, maybe he's cleaned up his ways.
Maybe he listened to the pod.
Maybe he's a new driver. He might be a listener.
Yeah, I wonder. Subscribe and rate us, Pierre. 5 stars, buddy. Sorry about insulting your hat, but really, yeah, honestly, that's not how you wear a hat, dude.
Everything we say is negative. We apologize.
Yeah. So far, we haven't had very much good to say about Pierre Gasly. Maybe, I hope he's not a listener, but if he is, we'll take him. We'll take all comers. Dude, speaking of Pierre being the farthest, not Red Bull car, but you know what I mean, like the farthest Red Bull driver up the road. I'm stealing this. This is material. I'm just totally stealing, by the way. So shout out to whatever source I heard this from. I don't remember at this point because I've been consuming lots of media this morning. If I ask you which three cars were the fastest in the speed trap, the three fastest top speed on, or which three cars had the fastest top speed today or yesterday, I guess it was, what would you guess?
Which three cars were the fastest through the speed trap? I would say Vettel.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Leclerc.
Yeah. Chucky Cluck.
And Lando Norris.
Okay, interesting. So you threw in a curveball. Dude, it was the three Honda-powered cars.
No way.
Way. Honda, man. Honda is could be resurging.
What if they put in new power? They put in new power. Well, Max didn't, right? Because he didn't have the good.
No,
penalty.
Max did not yet. No, no. Yeah. No, yep. But still, and Max wrecked out on the first lap. So I think it was Albon, Kvyat, and Gasly were the three fastest top speeds today. Yesterday, I keep saying today, but you know what I mean.
By what margin? By a.
Oh, I'm sure it was 6 miles an hour or something, or maybe not even that much. They do it in kilometers, obviously, but I'm sure it was minimal. But still, I mean, that it says so much about how far Honda has come, and it's so exciting to have a third engine supplier that we're talking about being more powerful than Mercedes, maybe. I mean, that's super exciting, especially if they can continue that next year, and then we have a three-way fight for the championship from the beginning of the year between Leclerc, Verstappen, Hamilton. That's exciting. We're getting way ahead of ourselves now, but that's exciting. Kvyat, coming back to Toro Rosso, had a good drive too. And I think both Kvyat and Gasly benefited from Norris's not finishing the race. Remember, he like pooped out on the very last lap, which is super sad for him. We'll get to that in a second. But so I have Kvyat finishing 7th and Gasly finishing 9th, but I think that would have been 8th and 10th had Norris not died. Or you know what I mean? That's not a funny joke to make this weekend, but you know what I mean. So yeah, just simply strong performances from both Toro Rosso drivers and a double points finish again for Toro Rosso. Another great weekend. The next team on the list I have is Racing Point. Perez, great qualifying, qualified high up, and then ran at the front of the midfield for most of the race. Great race from Perez. Can't really say the same about Stroll, which is kind of becoming the narrative at Racing Point.
Yeah. I blanked out because I thought Perez was – I was thinking of who got screwed in the qualifying, but it was Sainz.
It was Sainz.
So I blanked out. But, yeah, another good race by Force India. They're still Force India to me. They always will be.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't – since I kind of tuned out for the most of the middle part of the race, I don't have too many comments on them.
No, there was some exciting racing going on between the Racing Points and the Haas, for example, and Perez did run at the front of the – at the front of the midfield for a while, and then he had to hold off the Toro Rossos and fought with the Toro Rossos and finished in front of them. I think they spent some time passing and re-overtaking each other too. Like I have here in the notes, you know, they too would have finished lower had Giovinazzi not crashed at the very end of the race on his own, and had Norris not had engine failure, then they would not have finished as high as they did, but they still had strong races, pretty strong races. Stroll, I think benefited more from strategy than he did from his actual race pace. And then again, from two DNFs ahead of him. So Stroll maybe would have finished not in the points had things not gone his way. Not much else you can say there, except just that it's interesting to me how Perez continues to kind of outshine Stroll and how much longer that story is going to unfold, because obviously the dude's dad owns the team. You know, I think we joked about, like, last week, like, what do you do when your son sucks and you have to fire him?
Hot take, you get somebody worse than your son in so he looks better. That way your son is constantly outperforming your teammate in 19th place.
Yeah. Oh, you mean you switch Perez with somebody who sucks?
Who's worse than your son.
Yeah, who's worse than Stroll, right, to make Stroll look good. Just take one for the team. Just take the L. Just make it look really bad. That's funny. Speaking of teams that don't look really bad, well, I mean, Racing Point doesn't look really bad, and we should call them Racing Point because, I mean, we'll try to be official podcasts. I know it's easy to call them. I'll probably call them Force India again too, but McLaren doesn't suck. Have had a great year, but dude, Renault failures again. You know I have no love lost for Renault. Two Renault engine failures.
So how I watched the highlight of that. How do we know that that's one engine failure and not just like fuel starvation at the end?
Just from I just read it was an engine failure. I think they just are sure it was. Like, I think they would have said if he ran out of gas.
It was just like it's broken and it looked like a car running out of gas right before the finish line.
Yeah, I think that they're too good to let that happen. I don't think they cut the margins that close on fuel. And I just read that Norris had an engine failure. You know, I'm just sure that that's at least what McLaren called it. So
I thought they were talking about it. They said they actually put like less fuel than they need to get through the race, knowing that a couple of safety car laps will happen and that will be enough cushion to get through the race.
Right. Not less fuel than they need to get to literally finish the race, but less fuel than they probably would put in. Like, they can lighten the car a little bit counting on a safety car. And then we did get like four or five laps of a safety car at the beginning. So that would have ensured that Norris would have had enough fuel. Because
Did Sainz wreck or did he just engine failure?
His engine failed too. He came into the pits.
And it just stalled. It stalled.
Yeah,
get it started back. The look on the pit crew's face when they came in for the pit, and it just shut off.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I think there's like an anti-stall device or something that turns on in the car, and it can be wonky. Yeah. It's like an electronic thing, and sometimes it just turns on and won't turn off or something like that. But still, I mean, it's an engine-related problem for both Renault-powered McLaren's. Just saying. Another Renault problem. Another Renault engine problem. Just saying.
Speaking of,
that's Renault. I did also want to mention before we move on from Renault that it was going to be a great race for Norris and his best finish of his career. He benefited mightily from the early wreck at the beginning of the race on the opening lap, and then went from like 11th to 5th just like that, and then ran in 5th for the whole race, which is impressive because he kept the Racing Points off of him. He kept the Toro Rossos at bay. He kept Kimi Raikkonen at bay, Kimi Raikkonen also got caught up in that wreck and immediately had to pit, but he just was going to have the race of his career. And it was just a shame to see Norris, whom I like a lot, Norris, going to finish in 5th. And then on literally the last lap, his car poops out and he can't finish. So that's a huge bummer for McLaren.
Which is why he was like basically in tears on the radio when he was screaming at his team.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. I need to go back and listen to that. On to the works Renault team. Ricardo would have qualified 5th, so that's strong.
If only he wanted to be there.
Well, yeah. I mean, he did qualify 5th, I should say, but had a 5-place engine penalty, so he started 10th. And then, I think just his race pace fell off mightily at the end of the – I keep saying mightily. I should pick a different adverb. His race pace fell off at the end of the race and went from like 10th to 14th. I think maybe it had something to do. He got kind of mixed up at the beginning. Was he involved in that wreck, Ricardo? At the beginning of the race? I can't remember. I feel like somehow
he remember. I think he was involved in the sequence of the events, but I don't think he made contact with anybody.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I think it was just that he kind of got, like, it screwed up his race, maybe. I don't really remember, but I do know that he has outperformed Hülkenberg for in qualifying and for most of the race, and just had it not been for luck, would have finished in front of Hülkenberg again. And so you have to kind of see this race again, almost like we see a situation evolving at Ferrari where Daniel Ricciardo has firmly stamped his position as the number one driver there. And of course that goes without saying now because Hülkenberg is gone next year. But it's been interesting to watch Danny come into that team and kind of just say, like, this is my team now, you know? I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do next year.
I should hope he does that.
Right, like, right.
I still hate Renault. I hate Danny, so I'm not.
Yeah, I know. That's so funny that you're a Danny hater. I don't necessarily. He's not like. Speaking of which, I'll take a brief moment to say, Caitlin and I thought of a three-person podcast we can do where we just talk about our favorite drivers. So we'll get onto that if you want to do that. That'd be a good one. But yeah, it'd especially be interesting because you don't like Daniel Ricciardo, and like everybody loves Daniel Ricciardo. I don't necessarily. I wouldn't rate him as maybe my top three drivers or anything, but. That's so funny that you don't like Danny Ricciardo. I just find that funny. But the Renault story, even though I don't like Renault for the reasons I've stated previously, it will continue to be interesting to just see what they're able to do and put together, because now that they have Ocon and Ricciardo, two highly rated drivers, and they've invested so much in this Formula One team, 2020 is a big year for them, because I think they already have to start looking beyond this year to next year and what they're going to do with this new sexy driver lineup that they have, because I tell you what, they can't finish where are they right now in the rankings. I have it at the bottom. They're sixth. They're not going to want to finish sixth again next year in 2020, in 2021.
Only 3 points clear of seven, too.
Yeah, right. And number seven is who? Racing Point. So yeah, they want to be fighting Red Bulls.
I like how you put the engine manufacturers in there for me.
There you go. Yeah, I mean that is technically their official name. I was trying to be official, but I also thought of you while doing that. Anyway, so you got anything else about Renault? How do you feel about? You feel like Ocon replacing Hülkenberg is the right move? I know you kind of mentioned that earlier, but you think that's the right call?
We'll see. I've never seen Ocon do a bunch of races since I just started following Formula One a year or so ago. All I really saw was kind of what I saw in the Netflix documentary. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a clear picture of what he is. But I liked him more than I liked Perez. So, I mean.
Yeah, I did too. By all accounts, the people who know Ocon and the people who are involved in the Mercedes driver program and everything consider him a future world championship type talent. You know, on par with people like Verstappen and Leclerc, just given enough time. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Certainly that was the way people thought of Nico Hülkenberg when he entered, and his career has not panned out that way, but Ocon is not Nico Hülkenberg. So that brings us on to Haas. Same story again. Great qualifying, nowhere in the race. End of story for Haas. What else can you say? That's it. Great qualifying, nowhere in the race. It's getting embarrassing, dude.
And they, like, it's like when your football team's like 3-8 and you're like, don't even know if you want to watch them play the Packers on Sunday or something like
right.
that.
Right. That middle part of the race that you zoned out for, dude, I can sum it up for you. It was everybody passing the Haas cars. Yeah. It was one at a time.
Do you think, just, were they on the medium compound tires? Was that when everybody over to softs, and maybe they were just laid on.
I don't remember, but I can find that out for you real quick. What they started on.
Just a thought, but yeah, they suck. That's all you can really say.
Suck. Oh man. Hold on.
This just randomly made me think. We were talking in the last podcast about U.S. drivers. There is a U.S. guy in Formula 2.
Oh, okay, good. So I was wrong about that. I'm glad I was wrong. Yeah, who is it?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know his name? That's funny.
An American flag.
Oh, on one of the cars?
No, just on one of the. I'm trying to confirm it now. I'm trying to give, in case he's a listener.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's like, those guys. I was about to curse. The Haas cars started on, I can tell you right now in 2 seconds. Let's see, where are the Haas cars? I'm scrolling. I have these notes. Magnussen started on the soft and switched to mediums. One-stop race. Grosjean, same. Started soft and switched to mediums, one-stop. They both started in the top 10 and both finished outside of the top 10 and would have finished even lower had Giovinazzi not wrecked and had Norris not DNF'd. So, I mean, man. Yeah, the middle of the race, it was sad to just sit there and watch car after car drive by Kevin Magnussen. That's what it looked like, was Kevin Magnussen started at the front or near the front, and then just one at a time, it was like a Racing Point goes by him, a Toro Rosso goes by him.
Screaming Viking obscenities every time he gets past.
Probably was not very happy.
Are you ready to hear who the great American hope is?
Yeah, who is it?
Juan Manuel Correa.
Oh, that guy was the guy in the wreck? That guy was the guy who hit Hubert, Correa.
Terrible.
Yeah. He's American?
Yeah, well, yeah, he's American. He's 20 years old. He's a rookie. He drives for a Sauber Junior team by Charros.
Yeah, what are they called? What's their team called? The team? Did you just say it and I zoned out?
Sauber Junior team by Charros.
Oh, okay. I don't
know, and that correctly.
Okay. Yeah, well, man, Correa, he had to have like emergency back surgery or something, if I remember correctly. Don't take this as a source of news. We're certainly not journalists, but
I think he got sent to the hospital for sure. I think they all three did.
Yeah, they did, and like one of them was kind of immediately released and he was fine, and then one of them had like a really badly broken leg and back. And I think that was Correa. I think.
Yeah.
I know.
Well,
awful. Haas, going back to Haas, speaking of Americans, I just hope they can get it together. And I hope they can get it together with K-Mag there, because I'm a big K-Mag fan, and you know that already. I just want to throw it in one more time. But I just hope they can get it together, man, because it was so exciting last year to see Haas battle for fourth place. And if Haas can be clearly the best midfield team, then that's really exciting. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to pause this because Caitlin's doing dishes. And can you hear that?
No, just keep going.
Okay, never mind. I'll just edit that
part
out.
We're almost done anyway.
Yeah. I just hope they can get it together, the American team. And I hope they get everything straight now with Rich Energy too, and they can get a proper sponsor, or Rich Energy can become a real company that actually produces energy drinks, you know?
Let's get Dell Technologies to get off of McLaren, which is a British team. Get them sponsor Haas.
Yeah.
You got plenty of money to throw around, the sponsor and everything.
That's a good point.
You get Michael Dell into Formula One.
Yeah.
You need to do an inception on him.
Yeah. Surprisingly.
I'm keeping my expectations low on them because they're the American team, but I don't want to get too invested and just get my heart broken every week.
Yeah, I get that. I tend to think of it not as like I'm emotionally invested in it. I just like, I naturally pull for the American team because I just want them to stay in the sport and I want them to do so well. They're not my favorite team, like emotionally, you know what I mean? Like, I don't like, my gut isn't like, yeah, Haas, kinda. I mean, it was more so last year than this year for obvious reasons, but it's like a more like, intellectual thing than sentimental thing for me. I just really want the American team to do well, but I get what you're saying. You don't want to get too invested in them because they might let you down.
It's like the men's soccer team at the World Cup. It's like,
yeah,
we're getting better, but like our market and like the place that the sport has within our culture is just not the same level. And like that's kind of like a weird wishy-washy way to think about it, but maybe that's part of it too. Is like and I'm team based in America just can't be there yet because the sport just isn't, you know.
It's a good point. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but yeah, we don't have the same culture that they have in the UK, for example, or Germany, or even France, that surrounds motorsport. I mean, not Formula One motorsport. We do have a strong motorsport culture in the United States. It's just not, it's not a Formula One culture, obviously.
Hillbillies.
Yeah. Bootleggers. Surprisingly,
did you see who was there? Sir, what is it? Sir Charles, I think, or the head of the principal of Williams?
Oh, yeah.
Trying to rally the troops?
Yeah, Frank Williams, Sir Frank.
Yeah,
he's usually there, I think. I mean, especially at some of the races that are easier to get to. But yeah, he's getting old. He's got to sit in that wheelchair, unfortunately. There's a great movie about Williams, by the way, that I highly recommend if you want to just get a little deeper knowledge about them and the history of their...
I think every time I get onto Netflix, it's right there.
It's, yeah, like, it's just called Williams.
And I just haven't gotten to it yet.
It's sad, I'll warn you.
Yeah.
It'll make you sad. It's kind of dark. But surprisingly, Williams is not the last team on the list. They did finish 17th and 15th, benefiting from some DNFs and benefiting from Giovinazzi wrecking and finishing dead last. He did finish, but he finished after everybody else. Kubica in qualifying's engine blew up, like you said. That kind of caused...
It looked like a space shuttle launch.
Yeah.
And then he gets out of the car, and there's just flames coming out of the back, and he's, like, checking it out. Like, I would have been...
sprinting
perimeter around the vehicle that was on fire. Yeah. And then they're pushing it off the track and, like, they're zooming in. There's still a fire going on inside the exhaust, like, when there's like six people pushing it off the track.
Yeah, they are sometimes remarkably calm about their cars being on fire. You'd think that they're sometimes not, like when they're upside down, for example, Nico Hülkenberg last year in Abu Dhabi.
Get me out of here.
That was, yeah, I'm hanging like a cow or whatever. But yeah, they can be surprisingly cool.
Will kill you first a lot of times before the fire will kill you.
Oh yeah, I think that's what Niki Lauda was so. What hurt him so bad was all the internal injuries from that fire that he suffered from in 1974, whenever that was, of course. Yeah. But I mean, on pure pace, Williams was bad again because they're not good. Especially with a Mercedes engine, but you know, finishing 15th, starting 14th looks a little bit better. I think, like, kind of like I mentioned, maybe it was during Caitlin and I's podcast about the way the teams look, but they're getting a little bit better. I think that's about the best you can say about Williams right now, is that they've improved a little bit. Kubica went from the pit lane to 17th, again, only because of some DNFs and some wrecks, but still, you know, finishing on track ahead of other people is better than Williams has done recently. So I don't know. You can hand it to him for that, I guess, but otherwise still pretty sad news at Williams and brand new engines too.
Yeah. Which could have maybe not been at full power because of,
right,
she said it had in the beginning of the week.
Right. Yeah. Which finally brings us to Alpha. Two wrecks. The wrecky team.
It's a picture of what Alpha would look like if they didn't have Raikkonen every week.
Right, which is finishing wherever Giovinazzi ends up finishing, which sometimes is last because he wrecks. He's been a little wrecky recently. Giovinazzi's got to be out of that seat, probably. In fact, that's another potential landing place for Hülkenberg, I heard, is Alfa Romeo to replace Giovinazzi, because I think they want to keep Kimi. I think they want to keep Kimi there.
Was it this week where they like brought in Ericsson?
Yeah.
Because I think what happened, didn't Kimi, you were talking about motorbike stuff. Kimi like wrecked his foot on motorbike. Yeah. He's apparently limping around.
Yeah, I know. And still went out and qualified sixth.
So they brought in Ericsson to race for Kimi, and then I'm assuming Kimi was just like, no, I'm racing.
Yeah, something along those lines. I don't know who made the final decision.
Sitting there with his aviators looking like a man rocket there in the pit, just nothing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not the worst job to have, though, being a little reserve driver, get a little paycheck.
He had a spot in the IndyCar race for this weekend.
Oh, did he? You know. So he missed his IndyCar race for this? Yeah.
But it's, like you said, that's his job. He's right. The third driver. He's supposed to be on call for if they get sick or Kimmy doesn't land his Superman trick in his backyard motocross.
Right. I did think it was funny. One of the commentators during the race was joking, like, maybe Kimmy benefited from hurting his left leg because that's your braking foot. And the best way to save, you know, if you have a hurt braking foot, just brake less, you know, just use your brake less. And he goes and qualifies up in sixth. I think Kimmy just loves Spa, honestly. That's what I keep hearing, is Kimmy's just a monster around Spa.
Do you think every single one of these drivers, when they just get into, like, their normal car to go to the grocery store, are left driving?
Is that what you were going to say? Left foot brake with their left foot?
Yeah, they have to be, because they're so
I bet they don't. I left foot brake in my car sometimes because I practice it in sim racing. In sim racing, I left foot brake.
Get called up.
Yeah, in case they need me, in case Erickson's hurt too. But in sim racing, you know, I left foot brake most of the time, or I'm heel toe braking, or some combination of both of those things. And so I left foot brake in my car just to practice getting a feel for it as I drive. Not all the time, but sometimes. And it's fun. It's racy. You know, it's fun.
We're going to try to do the go-kart that Coda.
Yes.
You might have to come up for it.
Oh my God, I'm there, man. Dude, I'm going to the race. Are you going to the race?
I'm going to probably have to. I haven't gotten tickets or anything yet, but I'm going to probably have to. But yeah, they have like that little smaller kart track just for karts right next to it.
Who is this? What's happening? What tell me more about this, cuz I'm a super intrigued.
Try to get as many people as possible. Friends and stuff to go. I still got to call them and figure out. I don't know if it's like you sign up for an open race or if there's a way to maybe
it's probably arrive and drive type deal. That's the way they usually do it. And you pay by the minute usually. I've looked into karting a little bit, and it's kind of like you pay, you know, $40 is like 2 20-minute sessions or 3 10. It depends on how it's organized, but it can be like 2 20-minute sessions or 2 10-minute sessions and then a final, or two heat races and then a final, or it can be there. They organize all different kinds of ways.
Well, if any of you listeners are still listening and you work for the Circuit of Americas,
please reach out.
apowerunit@gmail.com.
There you go. Let us know. We're there. And I will win that race, Paulson. Except for that, I'm weighing in at about 200 pounds right now.
I'm about 197, but if there's any reason to drop weight,
yeah,
I'll do it.
Exactly. We need to drop about 15 pounds each before karting in November. That's about 6/10 right there. but anyway, Alpha, speaking of, what else, what have we not said about Alpha? Kimmy qualifies sixth because he loves Spa and then gets caught up in that wreck with Max at the beginning, which we pretty much already covered. Giovinazzi qualified 18th and finished dead last in 18th. I think he had engine penalties. Maybe he took a new engine, or his engine failed in qualifying, so he had to take a new engine or something like that. I forget why he started all the way down in 18th. But I know Giovinazzi's wreck was just an unforced error, basically. He was just, towards the end of the race, he just lost the car and wrecked on his own.
Yeah, I hope they replace him next year.
I think they will. I think it's almost guaranteed. I don't know who they have besides maybe Hülkenberg to replace him with. But, you know, they're a Ferrari team. Alfa Romeo is technically like a Ferrari feeder team, so it would be a Ferrari young driver. And actually, this is worth knowing about Alfa Romeo too, is that Ferrari can assign one driver out of the two. Ferrari, the big boy Ferrari team, gets to pick one of Alfa's drivers. And this year, that's Giovinazzi. Kimi signed up for Alfa on his own. So even though Ferrari would probably want to keep Kimi racing because they might want Kimi back, who knows what's going to happen at Ferrari.
Their new third in his slot.
Right.
Gio's slot.
So if Gio's gone, then that would mean that Ferrari would probably be the team to assign whoever ends up in that seat, because that's their seat. Technically, Ferrari just literally owns one of the seats at Alpha. But dude, that's pretty much it. Did we miss anything?
I don't have anything else. I'm excited. We got the only quick turnaround. I can't imagine how hard it's going to be for all these teams to get everything to Italy, like, and get set up. I think it's going to be touch and go and practice and qualifying, but that'll make it exciting. I'm just happy Formula One's back, but I think that's all I got.
Yeah, there's so much interesting, so many interesting little intricacies involved in all the logistics of the travel and everything. That could be an entire podcast. I don't know enough about it to actually podcast about it, but that's so interesting how they travel so far, so fast, with so many resources and so much money and manpower and time to get set up by Wednesday. Basically, you know, they have Monday and Tuesday to travel, and then Wednesday they're already set up Thursday, maybe by Thursday, I guess, but you know, free practice starts Friday, so they don't have very long to get set up, which is exciting. Makes for an interesting transition. I have the current driver standings here. We don't have to run through the whole driver standings, but I just thought it was interesting that Hamilton extended his lead. Still looks like he's going to run away with it. He's still basically, just to summarize, there's nobody who's going to threaten him at this point. If it were going to be anybody, it would be Bottas, but I don't think that's pretty much out of the question at this point. It'll be interesting to watch Albon and see how fast he can climb now that he's in a, see how many points he can finish with now that he's in a Red Bull. Meanwhile, in the constructor standings, Mercedes is 150 points clear of Ferrari about. So that championship is done and dusted too. But I'm still optimistic for the end of the season, because I think there's a lot to look forward to for these young drivers, the young rookies, to continue to develop. There's a lot to look forward to with Honda continuing to develop. And then there's a lot to look forward to with driver changes and driver, you know, new drivers and driver rumors and stuff. So even though the championships are pretty much over right now, there's still a lot to be excited for the rest of 2019 and looking forward to 2022. Did I say that right? 2020? Yeah, that's right. That sounds wrong for some reason. 2020. There we go.
Time flies. But yeah, should be good.
Cool. Any final thoughts, bro?
Nope. I'm off to the bike shop, get the mountain bike fixed, and
good.
Get a little ride in later. So
good.
Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
I will. You too. Talk to you soon, brother.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Later.
Bye.
If you like what you just heard, please like us, subscribe to us, leave a 5-star rating. All of these things are good for us, I've heard. They're really good for a podcast to get more attention, which means we're more successful and we can continue bringing you this quality content that I know you're craving and just eating up. So please do those things, and we would like to in turn thank you not only for doing so, but for listening and hopefully enjoying the Formula Fun podcast. Eric and I hope you have a great week. And we'll see you in Monza.